Yes, as I said, we have Ambassador John Limbert online from Washington, D.C., and it's really an honor to have Ambassador online tonight. And welcome to the show, John. Okay, let me try again. John? Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I was saying that we have Ambassador Limbert tonight with us, and it's a real an honor to be able to talk to you, John. John Limbert was, I guess, started going to Middle East as a Peace Corps volunteer, and he's been in Iran for a while, and then he returned back as a diplomat and served in U.S. Embassy in Tehran, and it just happened to be right before the hostage crisis, and he will be talking to us about that incident as well. And then later on, Ambassador Limbert was the ambassador to Mauritania. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right.
Okay, John, could you please give us a little background of how did you become involved with Middle East, and what interest did you have, and about your time in Iran and what you're feeling? And I know you are very much interested in the culture and in the country, and you have written extensively about it, and we will talk about that later tonight.
Well, first of all, I'm very much looking forward to being out in Portland. I'm going to be out there this week, this weekend.
Actually, is the next weekend?
That's right. I'm sorry, the weekend after the weekend of the 9th. And it's the nicest thing is that Portland State has been kind enough to invite me to come out because they are restarting their Persian language studies, which is wonderful news. And so we're looking forward to meeting all the people out there and to seeing what this new program.
That's correct. I will be talking to John Damis. Professor Damis is the director of Middle East Studies at Portland State University. After talking with you, John, and he will be talking about this program, which was actually shut down early 80s, and Portland State didn't have any Persian studies class. Although they had some classes on and off, but they didn't have a program or a tenure track professor. Now they are hiring one, and we will be talking about that with John Damis later tonight. As John mentioned, he's the keynote speaker for a banquet reception for the rebirth of Persian studies at Portland State University, and I tell you, our community is very, very excited about this. And we have been waiting for this opportunity to come. And fortunately, there was some opportunities to get some funding and get the program running.
Well, you know, I had been meaning, Gudars, I had always wanted to come out to Portland. My good friend Terry O'Donnell, whom I knew in Shiraz in Iran, 30 or 40 years ago, who was a native of Portland and who came back and settled in Portland after living in Iran for many years, always said, "You must come out and see Portland." Well, I never did, unfortunately, and then Terry passed away a few years ago. So I'm very glad now to come out there, and very glad to see that there'll be a new generation of Persian speakers. And a new generation of people who will know about this wonderful culture and this wonderful country, will do their studies at Portland State.
As I said, this is something that we have been waiting for longest time, and fortunately now we have the opportunity to start the program here. And as you mentioned, Terry O'Donnell passed away, I guess, 4 years ago. as around this time, because it was like the night of Iranian New Year when he passed away, and basically everybody was mourning during the New Year's celebration here, because we lost a good friend, and I know you did too. Terry also wrote a couple books actually about Iran. The Gardens of Brave and War, and also The Seven Shades of Memory was his latest book about the stories that he experienced and he wrote while he was in Iran. And I believe you were together in Iran for a period of time. Is that correct?
That's right. In the year was 1968, and I came to Shiraz. We came to Shiraz to live, and Terry invited us to stay at his garden, which he describes so beautifully in his book. He calls it a pomegranate farm, but that really doesn't do it justice. A few miles outside of Shiraz. People who know Shiraz may remember the Qasr Dasht area. Well, that's where he lived, and we stayed there for several weeks until we found a place to live. But we always used to go out there, and my special memory was going out there on the day that you call Sizdabedar, the 13th day of the new year, when people spend the day out of doors, and that's this year. It falls on April. So it usually falls on April 1st or April 2nd, and we would spend the day out in Terry's garden, because you had to pass the day outside your house, because that was considered good luck. To be in the house during the day was bad luck.
Yes, and actually this is going to be this Sunday in Portland for those of you who are listening to the show. And Iranians usually get together in a crowd in a park, and I guess it's going to be at Oaks Park this year. And lots of people are going to go there, share their food, their lunch, and there are going to be musics and all kind of activities, just people to hang out and as John was mentioning, to leave the bad luck outside the house and start the new year with happiness and good luck.
Do you have a large Iranian community out there, Gudars?
Yeah, there's about, there are different, opinion as far as really how many we are, but I think it's at least between 6,000 to 12,000 with all different counts. As you know, there is no rigid survey of the people, and I know the census number is around 3,800 to 4,000, and right. I believe there are more people who have not declared themselves to be Iranian.
Exactly. Washington is Washington, I think, is the second largest community.
Correct.
Washington area.
Yeah. After Los Angeles, I guess.
Of course.
That's the largest community of Iranians. So you wrote a book about Shiraz.
I did. I actually I published it last year, University of Washington Press, and it's called Shiraz in the Age of Hafiz, which was a reconstruction really of the city as it was in the time of in the 14th century, which was the lifetime of one of Iran's greatest lyric poets, probably one of the world's great lyric poets. And it's something I had started working on and researching 35 years ago. And it was a pleasure to, it was such a pleasure to put it all together.
Can you talk a little bit about the book? Or about Shiraz? I'm Shirazi myself, so.
Oh, really? Well, it's a very special. It's always been for Iranians a very special place. I found. Of course, it has a tourist side. Tourists usually visit it, and they visit it for the remains, the historical remains that are there. For the gardens, it was traditionally known as a center of what did they call it? Golubobol, flowers and nightingales.
Exactly.
Of course, the famous Shiraz wine, which is now I guess is made mostly in Australia, but came originally from there. But Iranians saw it different. Many Iranians saw it differently. It was known as a center of learning, of Islamic scholarship. It was a center for poetry. It was a center for crafts and artisans, particularly miniature paintings and calligraphers. It was also what the Iranians called Burjul Olia, or the Tower of Saints. And it was a great center of Islamic piety. Many important figures in Islam are buried there. Not only poets. And the wonderful thing about it was that all of these different strands in urban life, they all coexisted. I mean, you may think that poetry and piety and artisans and all of these things would conflict. But they really didn't. They coexisted. Of course, there were other streaks there too. There was considerable violence in Shiraz. Occasionally there would be anarchy. One ruler would come in, another would come in. Rival groups would brawl in the streets. And yet, in the midst of all of this, the city had it flourished. It had a marvelous life, urban life. And produced some of the finest lyric poetry that's ever been produced, not just in Iran, but in the world.
As you mentioned, Shiraz was the place for burial of both Hafez and Sa'di, both very major and very famous Iranian poets. And I guess Hafez is pretty much known as the mysticism just right next to Rumi, who is now well known in the U.S. But I have seen books of Hafez also being translated in English more often than before. And then, John, what happened that you went back again to Iran after your
well,
first...
Well, I first went there, actually, Gudar, in 1962. I was a college student. Visited there. I went again in 64. I've been there as a Peace Corps volunteer, high school teacher. I was there later as a university teacher and a researcher. I've been there. I was a diplomat there. I was in the embassy, but for a very brief time, actually, only about 10 weeks. And then I became a prisoner. Then I was a prisoner for 14 months. And I haven't been back since 1981. I'd like to go back sometime, but perhaps later conditions will be such that I can go back.
You wrote also a book called Iran, and the title is Iran at War with History. Can you elaborate on just the title? What do you believe in that?
I wrote that about... about 20 years ago, and it's a history, really. It's a short, almost comprehensive history, and looks at the culture and the language and the people, and tries to take a longer view of the country. And I suppose my thesis was looking particularly at that time, and this was the middle 80s, and Iran was going through a very difficult period. Of course, I myself and many friends had gone through a very difficult time. This was the period of the Iran-Iraq War. This was a period of great upheaval inside of Iran, and the voices that we were hearing from Iran were not pleasant. They were the voice of the street gang, the shouting mobs, the people chanting slogans, and it drowned out what I always thought was a more the historical voice of Iran, which was this voice of poetry and music and scholarship and great tolerance, and great tolerance for human diversity. So I simply put that title, and it said it seemed to me that the country was at war with its own history, and that somehow it would have to resolve to which history it was going to take, and that it would eventually return to what was its real history, and that eventually these discordant and harsh voices would be overtaken, would be silenced.
Welcome back. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Gudar Zektadari, your host for Voices of the Middle East. And the phone number to call to support this show and this radio station is 503-232-8818. And from outside Portland, 1-877-500-5266. I'm speaking with Ambassador John Limbert, who is going to be in Portland on April 9th. For a banquet reception for Rebirth of Persian Studies at Portland State University. And we were talking about John's book that was written about 15 to 20 years ago, Iran in the War with History. And now I would like to ask, John, what do you think about today, 20 years later?
Well, it's, it's Iran at that time was going through a difficult period. I would have, again, I think, as I told you, I would like to be able to go back to see friends, to see places. But who knows when that will happen? I think sooner or later, the country will find its way back on a better path. But how can I say when that's going to happen? I mean, one thing strikes me about the history of this history of the country. You have to take a long view. I mean, 25 years, 30 years, in the span of 2,000 to 3,000 years of recorded history, probably isn't very much. That doesn't make it any easier for people who have suffered or who had to leave or who underwent such such difficulties, that's probably small comfort. But at least I think in the long term, the country will find its way back to a better and more real identity and sense of itself.
And John, I guess you're not alone who are kind of wishing for a nice, return. I know Terry O'Donnell died without getting a chance to go back and visit Shiraz and Isfahan and the rest of the country. And there are many Iranians, and including myself, who really have lost that opportunity for several reasons. And we all really like to find Iran back again in the world community and, in a way, prosperous for the people of that country. And I guess this is everybody's will and everybody's wish. But there are some, realpolitik that I'm sure you know better than anybody else. What do you think about the U.S.-Iran relation? I know the topic of your speech the keynote speech next Saturday is, in fact, U.S.-Iranian relations, the long view. Can you give us a sneak preview of that?
I don't want to give it away, but again, that's really what I'm going to hit on, is that you really have to take a longer view. I think sooner or later, we will be sitting down and talking to each other. We have many things to talk about. And the question is, the reality is that since 1979, so how long is that? That's 25 years. We haven't done much but shout at each other. Perhaps that makes us feel good, makes both sides feel good. But at the end of the day, what does it accomplish? Not very much.
I totally agree. But I guess, again, some changes need to happen both in attitude of two countries as well as the realities in the field need to support that kind of change and that kind of advancement, and we are, I guess, hoping for that moment to come. I'd like to ask you if you have any final comments to make anything about the whole situation in the Middle East, or how do you see it evolving in the near future?
I've been connected one way or another with Iran and the Middle East for over 40 years now, and it still keeps its capacity to surprise me, and I still have this great capacity to be wrong about it, and to see miscall events. I'm very cautious about, about rushing to judgments or to say no, it's going to go this way or it's going to go that way. I mean, just look at the events in Iran of 1978 and 1979 and the revolution. Who would have imagined things would have gone the way they did and go so fast? I don't think anyone called it. Very few people did. I'm always hopeful. It's my profession. I mean, as a diplomat, you have to be hopeful. You have to be optimistic that people will see their way to a better future and to a freer future, and that people can find a decent life. But how you get there takes a lot of patience. A lot of listening, as I said, a lot of optimism.
Were you dispatched to Iran after the Islamic Revolution or right before that?
I don't tell too many people this story, but I came there on August 18th, 1979, And I, of course, then that was about 10 weeks before the embassy fell. As someone once asked me, he said, "Well, if you know so much, why did you go there?" And it's a good question.
Well, I guess I mean, I was in Iran at that time, so I can tell you that there was a chaotic situation, and there were lots of things pulling the revolution in their own way, and I guess the taking over of embassy was one of those moments that no one could forecast, so to speak, even the day before what happened. And I don't think there was really a solid plan for occupation. I know that for sure that it was a kind of very not really planned ahead of time. It happened through a or at least that was what my feeling was at that time.
Everything I've seen, and there are some researchers who've done, you know, who've done work and have gone back and spoken to the people who were responsible, and they said they as much as admitted that I think you're exactly right. They much as admitted that they had no plan. This was a kind of a demonstration. This was to make a statement, to a right. gesture, and the way events went afterwards was unforeseen, and they did not expect to find themselves sitting in the middle of this enormous international event.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there are lots to talk about, and we are looking forward to seeing you in Portland, John.
Well, thank you, Gudars, and it's good talking to you. And I like your show. I know I can listen to it online.
Yes, you can listen at KBOO.FM.
And I'm so I'll be happy to be out there. And I'm looking forward to coming out and meeting lots of good people. And congratulations again to the folks to the people at Portland State for this wonderful program that they're starting.
Thank you very much. I was talking to Ambassador John Limbert, who is going to be in Portland for a celebration and a banquet for Persian Studies at Portland State. It's going to be on Saturday, April 9, 2005, 6:30, the banquet, and 8 o'clock, that will be the program. And I just want to let you know, listeners, that the speech, which starts at 8 o'clock next Saturday, April 9th, is free to public. But the banquet and reception with Persian food and Persian music is $45 per person, and you can contact Portland State University at 503-725-4074. But again, as I mentioned, in order to listen to Ambassador Limbert, you can just show up at 8 o'clock. It's going to be at Hoffman Hall, Portland State, 1833 Southwest 11. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Gudars.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, welcome back. And now I have Professor John Damis, who is Director of Middle East Studies at Portland State and a professor of sociology or political science at Portland State. And the reason we have the show tonight and spoke to Ambassador John Limbert and now with Professor John Damis was because Persian Studies program at Portland State University is going to have a celebration of rebirth next Saturday, April 9th. Professor Damis, welcome to the show. John, would you please give us a brief on how this Persian Studies program is now being funded and what was the process that we went through?
I'd be pleased to. For about 20 years, we had very little, and we had to rely on what we call adjunct or part-time faculty to give first-year Persian 1 year and second-year Persian the next year. But last summer, in 2004, we were able to get a substantial grant from an external foundation, a little over $200,000, to support for 6 years a permanent tenure-track faculty position in Persian language and literature. And that grant was conditional on matching funds from Portland State University. And I'm pleased to say that the university will be providing matching funds, and so we have full funding for the next 6 years. And during this year, we've been doing a national search to locate and hire someone for next year. We're not quite done with it, but we will be done soon, and beginning in the fall, there will be full offerings of first and second year Persian by a qualified person. So it's a very exciting period.
I know that Portland State went through a full recruitment for a professor in that position. Have you been successful in finding the candidate?
Not yet, but we're still at it. And a couple of people we were quite interested in ended up taking positions at other universities. One, in fact, stayed where he was. And so we're inviting another candidate in, and that will be in the next couple of weeks. And there are two possibilities. We could hire that person for a tenure-track position, or we could offer her a one-year appointment. So one way or another, the position next year will be filled.
Okay, about the program that we have next Saturday at Portland State, I guess we have given some information. Do you have any extra info that you can share with listeners?
Well, we're delighted, as you have earlier mentioned, to have Ambassador Limbert as our keynote speaker. That'll be a great addition, and there are two possibilities for your listeners to buy a ticket for the banquet. It's $45, and come at 6:30, or they can wait till 8 o'clock, and you can come. The general public is admitted free. You'll miss the banquet, but you'll hear all of the program and Ambassador Limbert's address. So those are the two opportunities. It's a great event, and we encourage you to attend.
An ambassador is going to talk about U.S.-Iranian relations, the long view.
Exactly.
And as we were talking to John tonight earlier, he was a Peace Corps volunteer in Iran and later served there as a diplomat. And also for a period of, I guess, 14 months, he was a hostage in U.S. Embassy in Tehran. We were expecting and looking forward to his speech. And John, do you have any other good news about Persian Studies program and Middle East Studies in general?
Yes. In addition to this tenure-track position that we've gotten funding for, we've also managed to secure an Iranian that is from Iran to come for a year as part of something called the Foreign Language Teaching Assistant Program. So this person will be coming. The person will be funded by Fulbright, will assist in two language courses each term, and also take two courses, I think it's a woman herself. So that's another bit of good news to help in our teaching of Persian language.
And Professor Damas, I have been kind of pursuing to get you to come to this radio station for an interview. I know after you took the chairmanship of the center, you have been so busy with other program and fundraising and all other activities that this has been postponed. But I hope that I can get a promise from you that you will be on this show in the near future and talk about the whole Middle East Studies Center and the different fabulous programs that you have for different languages. And I know there are Arabic program, Turkish program, and Judaic studies, and so on and so forth. So we're looking forward to have you on KABU and talk about those programs as well.
You have my promise, and let's do it in the near future.